Mr. McCullough, welcome.
Thank you, sir. I'm delighted to hear from you.
You have obviously written books on a very diverse array of subjects over the years, from John Adams to Harry Truman, the Johnstown flood, Panama Canal. What was it that drew you to the story of Wilbur and Orville Wright as a subject?
It happened, as often does, by chance. In finishing up my last book on those Americans who went to Paris in the 19th century to improve themselves as physicians or architects or artists, writers, so forth, I ventured across the line into the 20th century in my reading and surveying of the potential characters involved, and discovered the Wright brothers were in France, which startled me. I thought, what in the world were they doing there? They're just a couple of bicycle mechanics from Ohio who invented the airplane. It's about all I really knew it, but what we learned in 10 minutes back in high school. But not only found that they were in France, but what happened to them because they were in France is an extremely important part of the story of how the world suddenly came to the realization that man could fly. And I was fascinated, too, by their interest, particularly Wilbur's interest, in what he was seeing for the first time in Paris, the great Gothic architecture that so appealed to him, and the paintings at the Louvre, and his marvelous curiosity about everything. And I thought, these are interesting people, and I wanted to know more. And the more I read about them, the more I realized, this is my next book. And I also felt this could be, in my way of seeing things, the third in a trilogy that began with my book on the Brooklyn Bridge, Panama Canal, and now this. Three momentous American achievements that took place all within relatively little time between that period, the late 19th century, the early 20th century. And it all involved great risk. People died in building a bridge and building a canal and in efforts to fly. And each of them changed the world. I have this growing conviction that we must come to see history more than just politics and war. Yes, politics and war figure very prominently, but so do other achievements in medicine and science and technology and art and music. All that the human mind is so capable of doing once in a while that is exceptional and changes the path of the human story.
They were obviously had a lot of competition, these two young men from Dayton, Ohio, to create the first plane that was capable of powered flight. What was it that gave these two individuals the edge and made them succeed?
Well, I think it really begins with their study of birds, soaring birds, because they realized that those creatures have a secret. And we can learn the secret. Orville put it very well when he said to learn the secret of flight from a bird was a good deal like learning the secret of magic from a magician. There were these magicians flying overhead, and particularly the soaring birds, because they could stay aloft without even flopping their wings. How were they doing it? Well, they were riding the wind. And they had control by the ends, tips of their wings in a way that needed to be replicated in some sort of man-made device. And what they developed, which they called warping, was a way of twisting the wings, which enabled them to bank and curve and fly in a circle, fly in a figure eight, and land and take off safely.
And there was an interesting story about the in the bicycle shop in Dayton where they kind of discovered this by twisting a carton,
a box
that held...
Yeah, a little box. And it was a huge breakthrough. Then they had to face the stunning reality, a tremendous setback for them, that the data compiled about aeronautical physics, the data which had been the result of many skilled and highly intelligent people at work on the problem for years, that data was all wrong. As Orville said, it was worthless. So they had to start all over again. They had to create their own wind tunnel. They had to learn how does one design a propeller. They had to build a gasoline engine for the first time made out of aluminum. Each and all of those steps were radical innovations, original innovations. And almost always they're learning from their mistakes. They're learning from failures of one kind or another. This didn't work. Why didn't it work? We'll do it a different way, and maybe it will work. And there's great lesson in that. They were exceptional human beings in so many ways. They were perfect gentlemen. They were absolutely exceptional in their use of the English language, both correctly and persuasively. That they very much learned from their father. And they were great, great readers. As you know, they grew up in a family or in a household that, where there was no electricity, no running water, no indoor plumbing, no telephone, but there were lots of books. And the father encouraged them to read everything, or read about everything. And they did. They read history. They read natural history. They read fiction, the classics. They read Darwin. They read as far and as well as anyone taking a serious liberal arts degree in a major university.
And they had no formal college.
And they have never training. Went to college. They never finished high school.
But it was that family atmosphere. That
absolutely.
It was there on Hawthorne Street.
No question about it. And they had an extraordinary sister, Catherine, whose part in my book is major because she's credit is long overdue to her part in the success of the efforts.
Speaking of Catherine, I know you read over 1,000 private family letters that are in the collection at the Library of Congress.
Yes.
Many of them written by or to Catherine.
Yes.
How valuable was that to you in telling the story?
Extremely valuable. And I often think we don't write letters anymore. We don't keep diaries anymore. Nobody in public life would dare keep a diary. It can now be subpoenaed and used against you in court cases. The father insisted that they learn to use the English language and to write letters. Writing letters was part of the way of life in those days. And it's a shame it isn't still the case. Very little written accounts of what we're like, what we worry about, what we dream of, what our sense of humor might be. And all of those rights had a wonderful sense of humor.
Historians are going to have a difficult time sorting things out.
Indeed.
50 years from now or 100 years from now. I grew up in Dayton, Ohio. I was told a story when I was a young boy. We had an affinity for the rights in Dayton, obviously. Do you think that this story of their perseverance and their intelligence and their accomplishment is being taught the way it should be today?
No, it's not being taught at all. I gave a talk at the Tuck Business School at Dartmouth College about the rights, and I titled it Lessons in Leadership from the First to Fly. And I stressed a number of the things that we've just talked about, but I also stressed the importance of using the English language correctly, and the importance of perseverance, and of never getting too big for your britches, of never letting your success or your importance go to your head. The rights, no matter how famous they became, no matter how wealthy they became, never changed. They were still the same people, and they were modest, and they were polite, and they were good-mannered, and they never attacked anybody who was a rival or said things behind their back which were unfair or hurtful. They really were as close to living up to the ideals preached by their preacher father at home as any children could have been. And his pride in them, of course, was very great indeed.
Of course, I mean, Ohio and North Carolina have had this running battle over the years about first in flight or birthplace of aviation. Could you tell us just a little bit about why they chose Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, to...
They went to Kitty Hawk for three essential reasons. First of all, they needed wind. They needed to have the sufficient wind to lift them into the air. And they understood that perfectly, that because they've been flying, testing with gliders in Dayton. And they also were drawn by the possibility of soft landing, in other words, landing on sand, not hard soil or rock. And thirdly, the very little population. They wouldn't be bothered by people coming around to watch and make fun of them and make suggestions that were silly and use up their time. It wasn't that they disliked people watching. It was they didn't like the time it took to pay any attention to answer questions or to be polite and friendly. Polite and friendly people.
But they were focused on what they were doing.
Focused is the word. And all the way through their lives, they never married. They never went off on vacations. They never acquired material possessions of any great note. It didn't interest them. Their mind was on their work, and they loved their work. And oh, could they work. One of the more important people on Kitty Hawk, local people who got to know them and became very helpful to their efforts, was a man named John Daniel. He said, they're the workingest boys I ever saw in my life. That was really saying something, because in order to survive on the Outer Banks in those days, you had to work virtually all the time from about 10 years old on. So they were hardworking people. And to see these young fellows from Ohio dressed up in their business suits all the time, even when they're running their experiments, working as they did, making everything they needed themselves, all of that, that really made an impression, as it would on any of us.
On December 17th, 1903, what they accomplished on that day, I have a copy of the telegram that Orville sent to their father that I hang over my desk at home.
Success.
Yeah, the success. That was the word. Yeah. And informed press.
This debate, this argument over which state has claimed the Wright brothers, Ohio or North Carolina, is understandable. But in fact, both states have a right to claim them for theirs. Because, yes, they did make their first world-changing flight at Kitty Hawk on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. But the plane that they flew at Kitty Hawk was not yet a practical airplane. It couldn't adequately bank and turn, take off and land with great safety. The control of it was much, much less than what was needed on the part of the pilot. That plane, the first practical airplane, was developed at Huffman Prairie, the cow pasture, which was their testing ground outside of Dayton. And it wasn't really ready and finished until 1905, 2 years later, the 1905 Flyer, as they called it. And that was the world's first practical plane. And, of course, the plane that flew at Kitty Hawk was built in Ohio in the bicycle shop and then taken apart and crated and shipped by train down to North Carolina. What North Carolina can rightfully claim is the best possible location, the best setting to guarantee or make more likely the phenomenal success they achieved.
Just finally, before we wrap up, can you place the Wright brothers, where do their accomplishments rank in human history?
I would say that they probably rank with the top 10 breakthroughs of human history. And it would be a difficult thing to make such a list because so many of the breakthroughs of human history are occurring right now. And we don't necessarily celebrate them or even know about them to the extent that I hope future historians will. There's a man named Tom Starzl, for example, who lives in Pittsburgh, where I grew up. He's a surgeon, the first ever to successfully transplant a human organ, the first to do a double transplant, a human organ, successfully in both the patients lived. Now, that was a breakthrough of phenomenal surprise and equally phenomenal importance. But if you asked 1,000 people who's Tom Starzl, you probably wouldn't find one that knew his name.
Well, I know that tomorrow night you are going to be at the Kettering Middle School Auditorium in Kettering.
Yes, indeed. I'm very excited about it.
And the tickets are available at Books and Company in Dayton. The people who have come to this event are going to receive an autographed copy of the Wright brothers' book.
Yes, indeed.
And hear from you about it.
As I say, I really look forward to it. I just love Ohio, and I always enjoy myself when I'm there.
Well, you're always welcome here, I can tell you that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. McCall. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with historian and author David McCullough about his new book, The Wright Brothers. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Howard Wilkinson.